the guy that plays the guard in Looking for Parmak and all
that. Oh, yeah.
Places.
Do you know who that is?
Yeah, it's Phil Morris.
It's Phil Morris, yeah. Completely unrecognizable Phil Morris.
But I'm laying there this morning going, you know, there's something I've remember seeing him in like a military outfit. And I'm laying there in bed just thinking about it. And then it hit me. He was on that Love Boat series, Love Boat the Next Wave. And of course, then what did my head go?
Love.
I have been singing that for that's been in my head for like the past 15 minutes. I'm like, God.
Da, 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 da.
And then I'm thinking, oh, Robert Urich was in that too. And wait, Robert Urich was on Spencer for Hire with
Avery Brooks.
Isn't the Love Boat kind of like a dramatization of your time in the military?
I'm not going to dignify that with a response.
I just see you as kind of like Isaac the cool bartender.
Well, thank you that you thought I was Isaac your bartender.
I just have this image in my mind, I swear to God. But
me just doing the double fingers?
I put you in that outfit. I see all sorts of officers walking by and you're doing the double fingers and they're just kind of like rolling their eyes and keep walking. With the music playing in the background and everything.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell. So, what? Who's doing what today?
Who's zooming who?
Who's zooming who?
Same lines all the time. They're so stupid, but I just feel the need to do them all the time.
I'm doing Looking for Parmak.
And you're doing and the Battle to the Strong. Our military guy is doing the war episode.
Clever.
Oh. Funny how that works out.
We have Isaac doing the military episode.
Hey, want a drink?
See, that's, yeah, you know, now I got that in my mind. You're in this bunker with them. They're all crying, carrying bodies around, and you just keep giving them the double finger as they walk by.
I slow down, buddy. I sound more like the cat from...
You do, yeah.
Hey, buddy. Ow! Wow! Ooh, I actually did that pretty good today. Usually I'm feeling pretty good. That's mine, and that's mine, and that's mine. Well, I don't want that guy. He's ugly. Dead. Ooh.
Oh, damn.
You should really watch Red Dwarf, Paul.
I guess I should. Just a matter of finding the time, man.
I am not running a recorder, I just noticed.
That's bad. Run a recorder.
Yeah.
Matt hasn't worked for ages.
Well, that's another clip whatever. Right there.
That's what Angela says.
You love it when I get other people, don't you?
I know. I'm like, listen, and then I say something stupid, and then you get me.
I think the most recent episode of Listen to the Prophets that I'm editing. I think Andy said something similar to what he just did, and you said, "Paul, you gotta cut that. You gotta use that." And I did.
Because of course you did.
So you'll be happy that Andy will end up sounding silly in one of the post-credit clips,
as opposed to the episodes. Wow, Abra have reformed.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was kind of like, hmm.
They had said there was no amount of money that would let them come back. I guess there is.
Yeah.
I guess when you add enough zeros, there's enough.
All right, it just launched.
Mamma mia.
Give me your money.
I do like the ABBA hits. I can't say I've ever heard an ABBA song, you know, that's a deep track. So I don't know if I'd like them or not, but I do like the hit songs. I find them very catchy.
Fernando's kind of deep, isn't it? No.
No, that was a big hit. A deep track would be something that was not a hit, and that's on the album that you know, but the general public would not.
Hmm.
You know, if you're a fan of the group, you'd know all the deep tracks. But I don't. I don't know any. I think the only thing I've ever heard is the Greatest Hits album. But I enjoy that very much.
Well, the Love Boat was just pushed out of my head, and now Dancing Queen's in there. Damn it. You can dance. You can sing. Just like I can't hit that note. Ooh. He's the Love Boat bartender. Do 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 do. Alright, it says file. Klingon bartender. Bill, Dr. Bill, Klingon bartender. Worf, what a moron this episode.
Alright, excuse me.
Should we get to actually recording it?
Yeah, it says the file is growing in size, so I have to assume something's recorded.
Beat it!
If you don't rub it anymore, it won't.
All right, is this me then?
This is you.
Okay.
This is
us. Ready?
Never watched an episode of This Is Us yet.
I watch it with Tina.
That's because you're whipped. My wife watches it.
What he does in the privacy of his own bedroom is his business. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, a Two True Freaks presentation. Today, we're all pining for something. Something that we can't find, because we're looking in all the wrong places. As ever, I am Andrew Leyland, and I am joined by my two star-crossed lover friends, Mr. Paul Spataro.
Good morning.
I'm Mr. Bill Dr. Robinson.
You're going to have to excuse me this morning because I got this thing hooked up that thing that Worf had in the episode. It's hooked up to Alvin right now, and it's stuck on the back of my neck, and I keep, like, knocking things, damn it, off the desk. So you have to excuse me.
Yes, Alvin is controlling you like a puppet, and you pretend that that's not the way it always is.
I could just hear Alvin doing like a cat laugh as he's making you, and just saying, you know, dance puppet.
Oh. Dance, really, monkey boy, dance!
It's really sad when I try to jump up on a bar, and I don't make it. Or trying to lick myself, but
oh, please.
turn the camera off while you're doing that, eh?
Hey, I know. Sorry.
I don't want to see your undercarriage.
My undercrackers.
Today on the show, we will be looking for Parmac in all the wrong places. But before we do that, it's time to do our ever timely Star Trek news. And today, on the news docket, it has come to our attention via an officially released CBS video that Star Trek Discovery's rolling cameras on Season 2. Have either of you two watched this?
No, I haven't. Something about different costumes.
It's all behind-the-scenes stuff. It's all shots of them filming. But the dialogue is all from the cage. There are snippets of Captain Pike saying, "I'm fed up of deciding who lives and who dies," and there's a line from Spock in there, and there's a line from Burnham in there, which obviously isn't from the cage, but we see the back of Anson, whatever his face is, Anson Mount.
Anson Williams.
Anson Williams as Captain Christopher Pike. Sit on it, Patsy! And he's wearing the
sit on it, number one. He's wearing what?
He's wearing the cage uniform. He's wearing Captain Pike's gold command jumper and black pants. And if you remember, when we discussed the novel that we discussed, Desperate Measures, was that one? We said that in that novel, it gave an in-canon reason for the uniforms being different. So perhaps they're going to follow what the novel established, which would be nice.
Mm.
possibly. Oh, by the way, I have gotten about halfway through the other book with Lorca. It gets it picks up, and then it comes back down a little bit.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's kind of like a roller coaster. It just can't seem to keep, can't seem to peak, you know.
Like a poor now marksman.
Yeah.
Well, just keeps missing the target. It's not,
when it comes up, it's good, but it's, I don't know, the pacing is just really, it's not paced the way I thought the story was going to go, which maybe is a good thing. Maybe I'm just not used to this author, because certain things are resolved quickly, and then suddenly you're into a whole nother aspect of the story that I didn't expect it going into, and I was like, oh, okay, all right.
Well,
and a young Jim Kirk was just introduced to the story as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, we've talked before. That's where I start getting a little bit questionable on some of these shows, because they just try so hard to shoehorn in stuff that you're going to recognize. And you know, shows are one thing, but the books I think are even worse, because I think the books feel like they have free rein to do that, you know, at will, and they just, they overdo it a little bit. Now, this one may or may not, I don't know, but yeah, I don't know that you need a young Jim Kirk in the Captain Pike era.
Well, it does play into the story, so it's not, and he's interacting with Giorgio, and his mother is there, and if you remember from the episode The Conscience of the King, the guy that had half his face covered in, you know, like the metal plate,
yeah,
that young boy is there in the hospital, and he's, you know, because he was hit with the residue of a phaser cannon, you know, because he was too close, but not close enough to be killed by it. But that's what, and I'm assuming that either they haven't really explained or gotten down to like why they never fixed his face, because you figure at that point maybe they could have done something, or you know,
better,
I'm thinking
they could do better than what they did, certainly.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
I'm going to give you this giant head.
I'm thinking that it'll be something to do with the way they're portraying his character, the way he's acting in the hospital, that he probably chooses to look like that as a reminder, because he lost he loses his, both his parents, like his whole family is murdered in the incident. So I think that's where that's going to go. And then Lorca's going to hunt down Kodos. But see, that's the thing. It's like, you know, he's not going to find him. Or if he does find him, he's going to lose him.
I think that's more likely.
You know, because it's like,
he finds him and either loses him or lets him go intentionally.
I know how this is going to end, which, that's the problem with tying into existing stories that are resolved later. You're like, well, it loses some of the oomph. So, the first book was much better. Even though it dragged on a little bit with some of the quote-unquote challenges they had to get past.
I think the thing with the first one is that it was an interesting idea. It was just, it happened to be a mission with Georgiou on it and Burnham on it. So it was like an episode of Discovery from 10 years beforehand that just happened to have the Enterprise and Christopher Pike in it. And there was a good in-story reason for that happening. The actual situation that they were in wasn't a prequel, so you didn't know how that story was going to wrap up. So exactly, that was fine. What's put me off about even reading this one is, and it's nothing against David Mack, who's wrote it. I listen to him being interviewed. I've read one of his books. He seems like a really good guy on Facebook, all of that stuff. But just the idea of this one, that it all takes place on, is it Tarsus IV?
Yes.
With Kodos the Executioner. Well, we know everything about that from The Conscience of the King. So what reason is there for that story to exist?
Exactly. And then that's, you know, you know, I mean, you're getting a little bit of, there's only been, there, compared to the rest of the characters, there's been very little Kodos time and his motivations as to why this was done. I mean, it just seems like, well, I knew how to deal with a crisis and it had to be done. But it's like, there's got to be something else behind why It was so quick that, okay, we're going to kill 4,000 people because we just, there's 8,000 people here. We can't sustain them, everybody. And then now there's all this stuff being mentioned that, well, they actually picked who they wanted. And you know, there were certain people they told not to go because it was survival of the fittest. And yeah, there's all this other intrigue as to what happened at Tarsus IV. They actually absorbed like another 6,000 colonists from another colony that had a disaster happen. And when they came there, there ended up being some viral infection to the food that, because the seeds they brought didn't really go well, didn't mesh with the existing biological, you know, the botanical setup. So it caused this infection, infected all the food. So, yeah, there's all this other, but, you know, and I'm kind of like, yeah, that's a little interesting, but it's still, I know where this goes, so I don't care. So I've only been listening to it when I drive because it's just, you know, it's just on in the background while I'm driving. I'm not fully engaged in it except in certain scenes with certain characters.
Now, I you know, I've often bemoaned the bringing in too much stuff. I just did it a couple of minutes ago. But would it not be cool if you had Kodos and then you brought Kang in too?
I, for one, welcome our new alien overlords.
Just have it. You just have one scene where, for some reason, Kang comes through and meets up with Kodos.
Right. So yeah. So they've started filming, but there's no word on a Spock.
Any word on when this is going to be?
Not yet.
Wasn't it like next fall? Like
maybe.
Time as the other.
That would be my hope. January. My hope is that they do it as a true season, and you know, a year after the first one, come up with the second one.
Yeah, even if they have to take a break again at Christmas.
I think that's becoming just such a standard on cable TV shows that I could, you know, this is the first streaming show that I know of where they dropped an episode a week instead of just dropping the whole thing. So it seems to be, you know, that it took its cues from broadcast television, and I guess they'll probably do the same thing again.
Yeah, but I think CBS was doing that so that they could get the recurring revenue more, so you know. So,
but why wouldn't they do that again?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They'll probably do that again. Although I bet they had a uptick in viewership once the whole series was out.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I bet you there's a lot of people who are signing up for the free the free month once the whole thing came up, and then you know they just hope that enough of them are happy with it and stay with it. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay, we've got other news, but we have learned our lesson, and we will save that till next time.
We have to come up with a different name for this segment other than news, because we have such a delay between when we record it and when we broadcast
and
it.
And now it's time for old news that you already heard.
Maybe we just call it like commentary or something.
Old commentary.
Current events that aren't that current.
Not so current events.
Not so current events, yeah. We can ponder that, I suppose. Any road up. Looking for Parmac in all the wrong places was the third episode of season 5.
Whoops, sorry.
It was sung by Dr. Bill Robinson, written by Ronald D. Moore, and directed by Plain Simple Garrick himself, Andrew J. Robinson.
This is
original
his first...
date.
Oh,
his
sorry.
First directorial credit yet for Deep Space Nine, although he did have experience being a director before.
I'll shut up.
No, it's okay. Carry on. Original air date was October 14th, 1996.
Only a Ferengi can put a price on love.
You may be worth more than all the latinum in the quadrant.
But when Quark falls for a Klingon woman...
She's glorious.
The cost is more than he expected.
Why am I putting myself through this?
To seduce a Klingon.
What does she see in that parasite?
Quark must learn to be a Klingon. Love never hurt this bad. On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
The storyline runs a little bit like this, but it's a Wikipedia summary, so who can say how accurate it is? Grilka...
Wait. We could say how accurate it is. We all watched the episode.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll say after I've read it.
Okay.
Grilka, the Klingon ex-wife of Quark from a marriage of convenience, unexpectedly boards Deep Space Nine. Although her intentions are unknown, Worf is immediately attracted to her. That's putting it mildly. Klingon cock, but is dismayed at her friendliness towards Quark. After unsuccessfully attempting to impress Grilka, Worf is admonished by her advisor, Tumek, who says that Worf's dishonor precludes her from mating with him. In pursuing Grilka romantically, Quark finds himself completely unfamiliar with Klingon mating rituals, so he asks Jadzia Dax for help. Worf, eager to prove himself capable of courting a Klingon woman, joins Dax in coaching Quark to win Grilka's affections. Through diligent efforts to learn Klingon culture, including the holosuite reenactment of an ancient Klingon battle, Quark is successful with Grilka. However, a bodyguard, Thopok, becomes outraged at the unconventional relationship and challenges Quark to a fight. Completely unskilled at combat, Quark stands to either lose Grilka or be killed. Worf again helps the Ferengi using a special device implemented by Dax. Worf is able to control Quark's body movements from an adjacent holosuite and help Quark defend himself with a bat'leth, although how he actually sees Quark's moves is never explained. Although the device temporarily malfunctions, he ultimately defeats the bodyguard. This concludes with Grilka and Quark alone and enamored with each other. Boom chicka wah wah. Worf opines to Jadzia that Quark is unworthy of such a great Klingon woman, and she counters that Worf's interest in Grilka is superficial, asserting that there are much better options waiting for him. Boom chicka chawa part 2. Convincing Worf that... Observing that Worf still fails to see the subtext in her hints because he's a massive dick, Dax initiates an aggressive romantic encounter. In the next scene, both couples are shown in the infirmary. Dr. Bashir treats their wounds and quickly deduces the source of their injuries. In a subplot, Miles O'Brien is faced with the increasing uncomfortable situation of Major Kira Nerys carrying his baby and living with him and his wife Keiko. The two begin to develop feelings of attraction which are apparent to both Dr. Bashir and Odo, though Keiko remains oblivious. O'Brien and Kira try to avoid growing closer, but Keiko insists that O'Brien accompany Kira on a brief retreat to Bajor. As the shuttle is about to depart, Kira and O'Brien get it on just to get it out of their system. Kira reveals that their destination is a highly romantic session, which prompts Miles to back out of the trip. Kira also changes her plans and decides to visit her lover, First Minister Shakar, instead.
So she went to one forest instead of another.
Whoa!
Another block of wood.
Well, in both cases, there was wood. Anyway.
How is she going to explain that to Shakar? Really, I'm carrying someone else's...
No, she shows up and goes, surprise! I'm watching. And that's how they write Shakar out. He has a massive heart attack and dies.
I'm good with
that. Yeah, and that's him gone forever. And Kira's like, well, the guy couldn't take a joke, so screw him. End. I really like this one. I've got to be honest with you. I thought it was really, really entertaining all the way through it. I love that Jadzia is pretty much throwing herself at Worf throughout the show, and he's just too dumb to see it. I love the thread of jealousy that's running through the whole episode. Odo's a little bit jealous of Worf. Worf is jealous of Quark. Thopok is jealous of Quark. All of that's pretty cool stuff. I love the nods to Cyrano de Bergerac that are going on throughout the episode. I thought all that was well done. Star Trek's not particularly good at doing humour in the 90s shows, but Ron Moore pulls it off here. This is genuinely funny in places, and it's all just really entertaining, if slight. It's a very slight episode, but still a lot of fun.
I'm going to take issue with your comment that they're not good at doing humour in the 90s. I think DS9 did humour pretty well. I think TNG did not. TNG did not, and I think Voyager fell flat on its face when they tried to do humor shows. But I think DS9 did a pretty good job between, you know, the Ferengi episodes with the humor in those, and, you know, one we're coming up on, Trials and Tribulations. You know, I think they showed a good ability to have humor in their episodes, which makes them kind of unique among the Star Trek 90s shows, but just the same, I think they did it well. I think they did it well in this episode. Overall, this one, I felt it was enjoyable. I liked it. But ultimately, I guess except for the fact that it changes the scenery as far as creating the couple of Worf and Jadzia, it almost feels negligible to the point where, like, you know, yeah, I saw it and it's fine and I'm going to move on.
I was a little bit, I don't want to say taken aback, but the whole romantic thing between Kira and Miles, I was just like, well...
Yeah, it felt dirty.
Really? What? Well, not, I mean...
No, yes. it felt dirty to me. It really did. Like you know, I don't know, for him to have strong emotional feelings for her, I understand, you know, feeling she's part of the family or whatever, and
right, and then
you know, maybe over
sudden,
being overbearing and stuff like that. But to be all of a sudden having romantic feelings because she's
exactly.
there,
exactly.
I don't know.
That I couldn't buy into. I was just like, that just really, yeah, it's funny and it's, you know, it's a haha chuckle chuckle. But I just didn't. I don't see it happening.
And for Keiko to be like, that, just blind. It just seems stupid to me. In fact, if anything, in that situation, you would expect maybe their relationship would be more innocent and expect her to overreact to it would seem more realistic. And I don't mean that to...
It just felt like a badly written rom-com, almost.
Yeah, I don't mean like, that to denigrate, you know...
I'm not saying
she's got to be, you know, overbearing or whatever. But it's just more realistic, I think, for the person... For one person to look at two and see something that's not there than to have the two people not see something that is there. Which is something that was kind of a theme in this whole episode because Worf was so ignorant of Jadzia after they've built up for the last month or so, you know, that they have something going on.
They've gone and done things and fights and hints of things.
He's commented, oh, you put that outfit on to distract me. So there was definitely some romantic stuff going on. You know, maybe not... You know, physically, but there was definitely some, you know, flirting and things like that going on between them.
Jadzia looked him up and down like a side of beef when he first came on board the station. Angela watches these with me, and even she's like, holy crap, she just wants to tear his clothes off and fuck him, though. I'm paraphrasing.
Angela does not use language like that.
No, she doesn't, but essentially, Jadzia's, I'd have moved that for you. Jadzia's been all over him since he arrived. Like her spots, she wants to be all over him.
But I think this, you know, that would still be okay with Worf being ignorant of it, but I think he's shown some knowledge of it as well. It's not like he's been totally ignorant of it. Maybe he hasn't acted on it yet. But this is, you know, to act like, oh, they never had anything, you know, any romantic tension between them before is silly. Well, that said, I didn't hate the episode at all.
It was fine, okay. But... And there's one other thing that bugged me about the episode, and I believe it's the end of this one. Yeah, it wouldn't be the other one. The laugh that Worf lets out is so forced and funny.
Yeah, not his best acting moment.
Like, really? You sound like Jim Carrey trying to do a Klingon laugh. It just was like, oh my god, stop it! Don't laugh! But aside from those two little niggles, I like the rest of the show.
I like the Cyrano de Bergerac aspect of it. I really got a kick out of that, where he's, you know, schooling Quark on how to romance a Klingon. Mm-hmm. And then that was kind of, they put the new twist in it too, though, because he's already been rejected, that, you know, he's not really a true Klingon. He's been raised by humans and all of that. So, you know, I thought that was good. I thought that was enjoyable. And I did like the battle scene, although Andy was absolutely on the money. I thought that, you know, how did he see what was going on with Quark?
Okay,
he didn't have kind of any kind of, you know, glasses on or anything.
But wasn't it nice for once that we don't have to get a bunch of tech babble?
That was delightful while I was watching this.
Just
it works.
Just throw a pair of virtual reality glasses on him.
Okay,
I was just thinking this would drive people mad today because they didn't explain how that worked. And I'm watching it going, you don't need to know how it works.
Science!
Throw a pair of glasses on him.
Yeah, but it's probably just like the other TNG episode with a game that beams right into their eyes and shows a 3D heads-up display. That's what I figured. I was just
my
like,
eyes!
It's, you know,
so you think why it was on, Worf was seeing through Quark.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. Yeah, all right, I'll go.
And then he was getting feedback from the other one because, you know, Worf would stop. Like, what's to prevent Worf from following through with a hit? He was getting feedback from Quark's to tell him, you know, stop. Quark is stopped.
Cutting Quark's throat with it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm acknowledging off the bat that this is a nitpick that I'm over nitpicking here, but the guy who Quark is battling is a member of her guard. Mm-hmm. So you have to assume he's quite adept at fighting with a Batleth. Fair?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Worf, in his own body, may be capable of defeating this guy because he's Worf.
Also yes, fair, I knew right? where you're going, because I thought about this too.
But now, all of a sudden, he is effectively inhabiting the body of someone that's like a foot shorter than him.
Mm-hmm. With different not had length. The training that he's had.
Yeah, he's never. He's
well,
and,
no.
The but device, no, I'm not even talking about the training. I'm talking about that he's making these maneuvers, and he doesn't have any adjustment period for. I'm working in a body that's not mine, and the size is different, and the muscular abilities are different.
Yeah, that's what was getting me was the
that's
strength
what I,
level.
That's what I meant. Yeah, as well, Quark wouldn't have the flexibility that Worf has.
But he also, like, he's a foot shorter, so there's different moves that Worf might do to block that aren't going to be quite right in Quark's body until he adjusts to it. Mm-hmm. And again, I realize it's overly nitpicky, but that's what we're here for. that's the whole idea of the show, is to break it apart and see what makes sense, what doesn't, what we enjoy. And even stuff that doesn't make sense, did it bother us? That did not bother me, but it is something
maybe,
that I thought of.
Maybe Tupac wasn't as good as he thought he was. Excuse me, Topac. Tupac.
You know, if it was just some random guy who was, in love with her or whatever, who challenged him, I would be more accepting of it than for it to be, her guard. Because I figure to be the guard, you got to be trained, and it's like saying somebody in the Navy wouldn't be like a top physical specimen.
Hey,
yeah, and I think that's a valid point, but I think at that point we're just invited to go along with it.
At that point, we're going along with it for the fun.
Yeah,
it's not because it's not a serious episode, so it's I think they're saying to us, just let it go.
Yeah, just have a little bit of fun with it. I did find it quite interesting that the minute she walks on stage, Worf's very smitten with her, because I don't know whether this was a deliberate makeup choice. She is the most striking female Klingon we've ever had.
Oh yeah,
she is attractive as a Klingon, and I actually looked up the actress, and I'm like, wow, I think you're more attractive as a Klingon than as a human. But that's just me. Maybe I'm racist.
Oh, and just another thought, and this one did bother me a little bit. Continuity wise, you've never had a relationship with a Klingon female. He has a child with a Klingon female.
Yeah, but Kalar was
she
not
was half
fully
Klingon.
Yes.
I don't
yes.
care. She was raised on Klingon.
But she didn't.
She
follow
was part of the Klingon government.
But she didn't follow the traditions. She was not a traditional Klingon. No, that's their out. That's their out in that.
That's a terrible out.
I know, but it's still there. And they actually quoted that in one of their, like one of the nitpick things. They're like, what about Kalar? Which I almost had my wife, we were going to name our first child Kalar. Although I spelled it differently. And then my wife was like, wait a minute. I'm like, darn
it. Did you spot that the actress who played Grilka was Mary Kay Adams, who was Natoth in Babylon 5?
No, I only noticed that after. And then I couldn't remember who that was.
Well, she's caked in latex in both of them.
Yeah.
Her Wikipedia picture is not nearly as attractive as her Klingon look.
No.
If you met her in real life and somebody fixed you up with her, you'd be like, could you put on the Klingon stuff?
Here, put this on. But.
Well, she's also 55 now.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Absolutely
you ageist bastard.
Well, there was one of her earlier pictures that
may have changed shape over the years. That's all I'm saying.
I hate you.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at some of her earlier, ones, it's like, but the Klingon one, it's like, wow.
Yeah, I don't know what they've done, but they've really enhanced her cheekbones. So that her facial structure, and it looks like it, I'm just looking at a picture of her now. Obviously, they've gone for somebody with very expressive eyes again,
yes,
which
yes.
helps with Klingons, I suppose. But if you look at her, she's only got the forehead slap on.
Right, she's
all really the other Klingons. Yeah,
and her teeth. her teeth aren't that bad either. They're not all super snaggly.
So there's two thoughts here. One is either Klingons are more attracted to people to other Klingon, or Klingon men are more attracted to Klingon women who look more human. Or let's just forget all about that and say they just wanted the audience to think she was attractive too.
I think that's what it is. I think they've altered the makeup subtly so that she's not got anything really below her eyebrows.
Except for the fact that it was universally accepted that she was, you know, drop dead beautiful. It would make some sense that Worf would find a Klingon who looked more human to be more attractive because he was raised on Earth among humans.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
So that there is a logic there, although I'm sure that that didn't enter into the episode at all.
No, I think that's perfectly valid. So I do think that they did change the makeup slightly. And the fact that she does have gorgeous eyes does help.
Yeah, despite the fact that she's ancient now.
Well, she's not ancient.
Oh yeah, try and throw me a bone now.
If that's a recent photo, she may have changed slightly. That's all I'm saying. She's still a very striking woman, as are you.
Picard would call her a handsome woman.
Yeah, there you go.
Very handsome.
What was it? Wasn't one episode where, like, the girl was attracted to him, and he said something. I think it was in the one where he relives his life, Tapestry, and he says, "Yes, you're a very handsome woman," and she's like, "What the hell?" do you really think that's a compliment, Jean-Luc?
I liked Odo being teasingly jealous of Kira and Chief O'Brien, although I didn't totally buy that subplot at all.
Yeah.
I thought that one was out of Love American style.
Miles.
It felt a little bit, I mean, no fault of the actors, both of them try and sell it as best they can. But I was a little bit dubious about it. I don't know why. It just felt a bit off.
Yeah, that did. That felt very off to me, actually. That brought it to a halt.
No, I was just looking at the other things to talk about. But largely, this is a funny one that doesn't really have a lot that it throws out for us to look at. I mean, there's a good thread of jealousy throughout it, which I quite like. I thought that was quite interesting. And, you know, I don't really have any problem with Kira wearing very little.
Oh, yeah, that one, I was kind of like, wow, whoa.
Yeah, where he's massaging her legs, and you're like, yep, she's a dancer.
And it's like, where's his hand? Hey, watch it, buddy.
Yeah, further up. Oh!
Between two pillows. Oh.
Those aren't pillows!
No. So, you know, it's quite understandable.
I thought the subplot was, like, on the bad side of things. If the whole episode was a subplot, this would be getting a very low grade from me.
And then the chief at the end, where he's actually, like, he's leaning in to kiss her, I'm like, what are you doing? Where is she, like, extracting... You know, is there some hormone she's putting out? That
would, like, make more sense the way they're
doing things. That would make more sense. Yeah, I was just like, Chief, what are you doing? Like, you know what? You need to go back into your, you know, self-imposed, or put you back in a mental prison for, like, another 20 years. These thoughts out of your head, buddy. What's wrong with you, man?
And like O'Brien goes to see Dr. Bashir, and Dr. Bashir's all, did you look? And I'm like, how old are you, dude?
We see a very different Dr. Bashir in this episode than we see in the next episode. That's
yeah, he's all about, all right, so you want to bone Kira, do you? You've been bathing her.
Fnaf.
No judge, wink, wink, say no more.
Fnaf. He's pinky and pinky in the brain.
Yeah, he's pinky.
Oh, brain.
Hello, nurse.
What are we going to do tonight, Miles?
Same thing we do every night, Pinky. I'm going to massage Kira's naked bum. And it's just, you know, I mean, fair play, Terry Farrell really does seem to throw herself into playing a comedic Jadzia, because she's good at it. She's very good at, like, comedy. Armin Shimerman's as brilliant as Armin Shimerman always is. He's probably the MVP for this episode. But for the most part, it's a solid, entertaining entry. Not perhaps one you'd revisit a lot, but there's nothing wrong with it, and there's some genuinely funny moments in it. I liked it a lot.
I liked it. I'm not sure it survives the flick test.
Oh, I don't know. If I flicked it on when Jadzia is like, for God's sake, Worf, I'm stood right here, I'd probably leave that bit on again. And the bit where Worf's pretending to be Quark, I thought they were quite funny.
All right, I'll give you that. But, you know, it's okay. It's not that I hated it. It was entertaining to watch. But like I said, to me, this didn't have rewatchability. Like, I didn't feel any... when it was over, it was like, all right, move on to the next one.
I did like that Worf had scratches on his face. After their little tete-a-tete.
Yeah, see, my thinking with that, though, every time a Klingon has sex, they have to go to the doctors.
Yeah, it would make more sense if Jadzia had to go to the doctor, but not Worf. And Quark had to go to the doctor, but not Grilka. But the Klingons, you know, they know how to do it, and they, you know, they get through it fine.
This is how we do it.
Yeah, that's it.
But, you know, if that's the way it is, then that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Don't seem like we have a lot on this one.
No, well, it's the trouble with Tribbles, isn't it? It's a funny show. It's got some good bits, but it's not one you'd revisit often. Like I say, it's perfectly. I enjoyed it while I was watching it, but to me, this episode is the difference between something like Andromeda or Sequest DSV and Star Trek. If it's an eminently forgettable episode, likeable enough while you're watching it, but then you go off and do something else and you forgot about it 2 weeks later.
But do you think Blaine remembers it?
Go, let's see what he thinks.
Bill?
Yeah?
Sing us in.
Oh, since you wanted me to read the email, I'm trying to find it. I'm like, Blaine says, what does he think? Let's find out. Here he is now. Through the voice of Paul.
Now, you know, I was looking in YouTube to see if I could find just, like, the music for that. Because I have no musical ability whatsoever. And I figured I'd get you to sing it and take that music, put it on there, and create a bumper for Blaine.
Oh, I could do that.
But I couldn't find the music. So
I'll find something.
Either if anybody can find the music, or if we have any musical people in the audience who can record a little... quick little, what? You know, 5 to 10 second...
what I could do, I could get, what is it, Jane's Addiction? Jane says, I could do Blaine says, something like that.
Well, whatever you can do, or like I said, if any listeners have any good things for us, that's fine. But Blaine says, hi guys, after a war-heavy episode, we get a somewhat light Ferengi episode combined with a Klingon story, Cyrano de Bergerac Star Trek style, as featured in Andrew Robinson / Garrick's directorial debut. Still, this shows what sets Deep Space Nine apart. Even a throwaway comedic episode from several years back has ramifications for these characters. I enjoyed this, particularly Dax's frustration and the scene in sickbay. They definitely needed a light episode considering what this follows and what comes next. Blaine. It's kind of what we said, except I think Blaine found it more amusing than I did. But if this isn't my episode, it was Andrew's. So why don't you tell us how you rate it?
I'm going to give this a solid 3.5. I was entertained by it, but while I was watching it, it made me laugh, which is, you know, notable for a comedy episode. I don't think there was anything wrong with it. And I thought some of it was quite clever in the way that it was written. So I quite liked it. 3.5.
Okay. Bill?
Yeah, I'll go with that. even though I had, you know, little nitpicks and was thinking about things that, like, well, how did that work? Yeah, I'll let it go. How did that work? Yeah, I'll let it go. Oh, my God, the episode's over. It wasn't where I was like, oh, my God, well, how much more is going to drag on with this? And it was like, oh, okay, I'm done already. You know, but Flick Test, I don't know. Probably not. Probably wouldn't pass that. But, yeah, 3.5, man, I'm running out of things to pick. 3.5...
Klingon orgasms.
Oh, my God.
Actually, I was going to say broken virtual headsets, but thanks for that visual.
Because that's another good reason to like this one. Everybody got some.
Except Dr. Bashir.
Everybody wants some.
All right, Pauly Squire.
I think... To me, I don't know. To me, an average episode, even though technically the dead in the middle would be 3.5 on a 5-point scale. Actually, no, it would not.
I was going to say, would it be 2.5? 2.5.
I'm sorry, 2.5 would be dead in the middle on a 2-point scale. But for some reason, I always treat 3 as average. If it's an average episode...
It's a magic number. Oh, wait, that's a Schoolhouse Rock reference.
Isn't that figure 8?
No, that's... No, that's 2 times 4. That's a different song.
But yeah, I always treat 3. If it's an episode that I feel is average, I just generally put a 3 on it. And I think if we were just dealing with the Worf story, it would probably be a 3 for me. But I honestly feel like the subplot dragged it down slightly, and I'm going to give it a 2.5, which, while technically would be average, right dead in the middle, like I said, I kind of always look at 3 as being the average for me, so I'm going to say it was slightly below average. Was not bad. It's not that it wasn't entertaining, but I just didn't feel like it was a strong episode, and I just think it could have been better. So that's where I come in on it. And that's looking for Pockmar in all the wrong places.
Sorry, I just saw the picture Andy sent for this episode.
I have not seen that yet.
Higher!
I'm almost like he's like looking for a, you know, I lost my pen in here somewhere. I got a hydro spanner somewhere up there. Cough.
Well, so everybody listening, if you haven't looked at the picture on Facebook, go ahead and look.
Well, I'm sure this will generate comments when this episode comes out.
So you decided to focus on the picture, on the subplot, which I loved so much.
Sorry.
When Bill stops laughing, maybe we'll take a look at some email.
All right, I'll just mute myself for a second. You guys go on to email.
It's funny to listen to you laugh, though. I'll read the first piece of email, which is from our buddy Dave Pascarella, and it's titled Rules of Engagement. Gentlemen, another great episode. Just to throw in my experience, though I have not served in the military, I did work for the district attorney's office for 5 years, and on occasion, we would have a misdemeanor matter involving military personnel stationed at the base in the county. In almost every case, our charges were dismissed and the defendant was turned over to the military, as their system was more efficient and more severe than state criminal law. Regards again, another great show, David.
Emphasis on the more efficient and more severe.
I think emphasis on the more severe.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've never worked with criminal stuff, so I can't actually say anything from experience. Court-martial the hell out of these people.
Hey!
What, none of them follow orders? I mean, it's ridiculous.
I followed orders.
Well, you. The Isaac of the military.
Hey! Let me get you a drink, Doc.
I'm thinking you do the finger guns. They think it's a real gun and you end up with like 35 bullets in you.
Ah!
But,
give us them a suit!
And so I guess that's it, unless we have anything from Stitch in Time.
No.
That's been kind of on the back burner for a little while.
I know.
So. We will get back to it. And otherwise, what are we doing next time?
Next time, our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Jake Sisko learns no battle to the strong.
Huh?
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
Call to the field of battle.
These people need you.
Things could get a little rough.
Go to the dogs of war.
The Klingons. There's no stopping them.
Jake will confront an enemy.
The explosion, they kept getting closer. I had to get out of there.
He never knew existed.
People are dying.
What lies between courage and cowardice is pure terror on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
It's all right. Verse, actually.
Is it?
Yes. Yeah, it's from the Bible. I knew that.
And if I were a Bible reader, I might know that. But I'm not. How sad. See you all next time.
Goodbye. Kapla?
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
I will show you my batleth.
Whoa, I need to see your batleth.
Keep your batleth in your pants, buddy.
Working for nothing, all the wrong places. Working for nothing.